1980, Margaret Price interviewing Homer Dana, San Diego sculptor and assistant to Donald Horde, sculptor. This tape is for the oral history program for the archives of the San Diego Museum of Art. We are in the home of Homer Dana at 3838 Kendall Street, San Diego, California. November 17, 1980. Dana, tell me again about these couches. It seems to me that, what is this couch?
It's called a cong.
Uh-huh.
And ordinarily they would have little braziers underneath if it were too cold.
Oh, I see.
And some of the congs are actually built of the brick, and they have the fire right underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely cold country, because the room itself wouldn't be warm, but sitting on above
mm-hmm,
it would be
mm-hmm.
fine.
But could they put heat underneath this wood? Isn't this, what kind of wood is this glorious thing?
Well, I think it's common wood there.
Uh-huh. And these little round balls, what are they for?
No, they're for the armrest.
I see.
These are the larger ones here.
I see.
And sitting up with cross legs, why, that'd be just exactly right.
Oh, I see. So you would actually then sit cross legged on them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones in Tunisia. I noticed that
mm-hmm.
every place there they had these things, and people sat cross legged. And I know I went in a temple with a Muslim girl, and I was sitting cross legged. She said, "Ladies don't sit cross legged. You put both legs to your side." And so she showed me how to do it, which was most uncomfortable.
Mm, yeah. Like riding side saddle.
Right. Dana, this is a fascinating room. I'm very interested in this great, beautiful piece between the two windows. Can you tell me something about that piece?
Well, those are fragments that Donald had picked up, and he decided to utilize them that way, and that was originally a bookcase, and now it holds the liquor.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, who designed this room?
Well, I guess Donald did.
And you, the two of you worked together on it?
Yes. It has a high ceiling. It's 12 feet.
Uh-huh.
And that was because we were planned on doing large things.
Mm-hmm.
And we had big double doors there on the outside, but we made them smaller.
I see. They're very handsome doors. Does Florence still work in that little cubicle up there?
That's her studio.
Oh, good. And she's still working, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
What does she get? Was she still doing her beautiful Christmas decorations?
The same thing that she's done for so many years.
Oh, I see. Well, that's lovely. Then that picture of Donald over there on the stair, going up the stairs, the outside of the stairs, who did that?
That was John Asaro. He was the protege of Donald.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that after Donald's death.
Oh, he did?
From photographs.
Oh.
And he selected a photograph that he liked, and aged it somewhat because he still had iron gray hair at that time.
Uh-huh.
And he made the whole face
mm-hmm.
look the way he remembered it last.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Very, very nice. This is really a very handsome room. That table.
It was built just for a studio.
Oh, it was originally a studio.
That's
the reason for the high ceiling.
And during the Federal Art Project, a number of the artists were connected with the Federal Art Project. Stanton McDonald Wright and Lorca Feitelson and a number of others.
Mm-hmm.
And very often they would have a drawing session down in the evening.
Oh, I see.
And it is most interesting because Wright himself is a raconteur, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the other people were generally very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone told me that you used to at times serve as a model for Donald.
Yeah, something that I did a great deal of.
That's what I remember when we first met, and I said something to Florence, who was swimming someplace. Where did we used to go swimming? Someplace. We all went. And I said, "Gosh, Dana has a good figure." He said, "Well, after all, he was Donald's model from time to time." Now, Dana, you were born when and where?
I was born in Ellensburg, Washington, the 9th of April, 1900.
Wow. This is a great day, then, this year for you. You've become an octogenarian.
Yes,
I think that's wonderful. Well, you don't look it anyway. Now, what I wanted to ask you, too, was, I want to start with this. Some of your early influences, you know, your family, the teachers, how did you become involved in art and why? I mean, just kind of rattle on about that, will you?
Well, I didn't have any serious inclination toward art until I met Donald. And the first thing that we did, we used to go camping a lot. And that was about our only time we were together because I was still in the service at that time. And he asked me one time if I would mind posing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, sure. The stipend was very small in those days for any professional or semi-professional model.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I think was true of everything at that time. I mean, what an artist could get for their work and what a model could get for theirs was considerably less. Well, now, I read in your interview that you gave for the Historical Society that you came here because your mother was interested in the Theosophical School and wanted to place you in the school. How old were you then?
I was 9 when I came here.
Mm-hmm.
In 1909.
Mm-hmm.
My father had died, and she was very deeply interested in theosophy. And I guess she thought it would wash off on me, but I never did become very ardent.
Well, I think, you know, with my husband, he never became very ardent. In fact, he said, and maybe you feel the same way, he read the Bhagavad Gita every morning and never knew what he read.
Yeah. I was given one of those by my mother, and I kept it for years and years. I never did read it.
Uh-huh. Well, that was quite a movement here. I was just talking to Charlotte Braun, now White, and apparently she was there later than you and some of the other people, Art Loring, and some of the other people that you and I know. And so it took a different trend, I understand, after Madame Pingley died.
Oh, and entirely.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Peripher just didn't have the presence.
Uh-huh. But you weren't frightened of him. Were you still there when...
Well, I knew him to say hello to him.
I see.
That was all.
Uh-huh.
He had a little cottage by himself, and nobody seemed to know what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very respectful of him.
Mm-hmm. So then you were there after Madame Pinkley died?
No.
No, that's...
Well, I left in 1914. That was a long time ago.
Oh, yes. Well, she certainly had an influence on a lot of people in San Diego, and certainly was a woman of great taste as far as the arts were concerned, wasn't she? I mean, did you have any art at the school at all?
No, not in particular. And we didn't have any theological teaching or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that the teachers maybe might say something and stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't seem like a religious organization to me, at least.
Mm-hmm. But you did feel that you had a good education there.
Well, in many ways, they were far ahead of the public school.
Mm-hmm.
But in other ways, they seemed to be completely isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to speak of being away from Point Loma, being out in the world.
I see. I know I heard one person say that when he got out of the Theosophical School, he was completely surprised that there were other religions besides theosophy.
Yeah. Well, but I got to talking with Monty Machel. He was, 10 or so years older than I.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't mingle together, of course. We spoke to each other, but we were generally with our own age.
Mm-hmm.
But he came over here with his wife, who was Coralie Hanson.
Mm-hmm.
And there were the four Hanson girls that were the original students there, along with Mrs. Dunn, later Lambert,
mm-hmm.
the five original students. But they came over here and visited me one afternoon. They were living in Scottsdale, mm-hmm. in Arizona. And of course, we mulled over all the time. He told about when he left Point Loma, when things commenced to fall to pieces after Madam Dinger's death.
What year was that, do you remember?
Well, that was about 1929,
mm-hmm.
and I think he left there within the year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one other boy that was one of his peers that had gone to the outside world and
mm-hmm.
worked in Los Angeles under the movie censorship group. I don't know what they would call it, I guess that term.
Mm-hmm.
And he took some of these other boys that he was very fond of, and they'd grown up with,
mm-hmm.
and showed them the ropes of what the outside world was like. And Monty Machel said, well, I was just a babe in the woods. He said, I didn't know how to act, what to do. He said, I wasn't prepared to
uh-huh.
go out.
Yeah. But on
they
the
were
other
all musicians,
yeah.
and they did get into music, more
yeah.
or less.
Both
an opening for
yeah.
many of them.
Yeah. Both Hubert and Gene, and so did Charlotte Braun, they had two instruments. Alfie, they were there apparently a little later than you.
Mm-hmm.
And Hubert and Jean both had piano, and they both had a string instrument. And Charlotte said they had the same thing. But they really came out very way beyond in education, the grade level. Because I know that some of them said that at 11, they were at least 3 years ahead of that of an 11-year-old in the public school.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got a good education. Did the environment inspire you in any way when you saw all those great sort of Art Nouveau wall carvings? I understand one of the main doors is still around in San Diego here. Do you remember that door?
I remember them, and I knew Machel who carved them.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. He was Monty Machel's father. And I think his name was Reginald Machel.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting.
Machel.
Uh-huh. Because
and he used very soft wood, and he carved it just by hand without the use of a mallet or anything like that.
Chisel?
Yeah, just chisel.
Uh-huh.
And
files? No files?
I never saw any files.
Uh-huh.
No. Well, he just carved them. And he was an expert, and the chips would fly, you know,
mm-hmm.
long shavings.
Mm-hmm. That one is that Sir Galahad had, isn't it? The big door, as I remember. I've only seen it once, many
mm-hmm.
years ago.
I've forgotten.
Uh-huh.
I've forgotten a lot of things.
Haven't we
been
all?
A long time ago. I haven't thought about those years very much since I left.
Well, I wanted to ask you things that they hadn't asked you for your interview with the Historical Society, because I think a person's background is, what you've been exposed to kind of shows up later. Now, you said that the education that you had there was not related to art in any way.
No, it wasn't.
The
only art that really was emphasized was the music.
I see. Did you take an instrument?
Mm-hmm. I worked on the violin, and I also worked on a cornet.
So you had the two instruments?
Mm-hmm.
Education too that they all
yes.
seem to have. Now there's a little question to ask you. The high points in your life, Dana, what do you consider some of the really high points as a sculptor in your life?
I don't know how to answer that though.
Well,
the high points.
When you went to Italy with Donald and you were working on that great, beautiful piece work, it was
we went over the first trip. We did the Algonquin Squaw with a little bowl that was dripping water,
mm-hmm.
a fountain figure.
Mm-hmm.
And
when did what how were you commissioned for that?
Well, Mrs. Payne, who was a very wealthy lady, and she and her sister were heirs of the original, what was his name? I just thought of the name of these two sisters, and that was Kimberly. Mm-hmm. Their father was the original Kimberly of Kimberly Clark Papers. And she, being a very wealthy woman, had decided that she had discovered Donald. And
what about, when was this about?
Well, this was in the '50s, early '50s.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And she, my sister lived in Redlands, and she and Mrs. Payne lived in La Jolla, but she spent a good part of her time in Redlands also.
Mm-hmm.
We went up to there.
Dana, how did Mrs. Payne directly help Donald? I understand it was through Miss Kimberly, who the cousin to the Kimberly that we all knew in San Diego, Elsie Kimberly, who did so much for the artists and worked so long and hard on the Asian Arts Committee. Now, how did Mrs. Payne help Donald directly?
Well, being a cousin of Elsie Kimberly, and of course, Miss Kimberly always boosted Donald. She thought he was great.
Right.
And,
so?
And she said, "I want you to meet my cousin, Mrs. Payne." I forgot her first name now, but mm-hmm. Mrs. Nathan Payne, who was a widow at that time, and well along in years.
I see.
And she liked what Donald had done, and she possibly, in the beginning, at the urging of her cousin, might have sponsored the first.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought one or two of his wood carvings.
Do you remember the
gave them to the Fine Arts Gallery, mm-hmm. and gave one of them to the public library, and I don't remember whether four or not, but in any case, she commissioned him to do a bronze fountain figure.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the model for that, which she approved of, and we sent that over to Italy, and we worked in the foundry over there, and Donald modeled it in the cold winter there.
What year was that? You
remember? That was in late 1954.
Yeah, because I remember getting information on that somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But Donald worked with his overcoat on and all of his heaviest clothes in the little out-of-the-way spot, because this foundry had been bombed. It was right near the railroad tracks, and it had been bombed heavily, and it had been sort of shored up temporarily,
mm-hmm.
to so that we could work.
And in what? How were you helping in that particular enterprise?
Well, I helped do a lot of the work, but directly I was a stone carver and not a modeler.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always plenty of work to do, and of course another thing was that Florence wouldn't hear of him going over there alone because of the condition of his heart,
mm-hmm.
and he was to be spared any heavy work,
mm-hmm.
wherever, and so I came in, there was always plenty to do,
mm-hmm.
and he worked in this little place that's as cold as can be in the winters, and Florence are awfully cold.
Oh, I know.
And he wore his overcoat and even a little hat.
Uh-huh.
A little cap of these little berets. That
did you cover your ears too?
Well, part of the time.
Well, now, did you start the work here, or did you just do the small model for Mrs. Payne?
Well, just the small model.
I see. That was the customary procedure, wasn't it? And presenting a work for a commission.
Yes,
a sketch, then the small model in clay, I presume?
Well, the sketch, in his case, was quite well finished. It mm-hmm. wasn't just a thought sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cast in plaster and then recarved to bring out all the fine detail.
Mm-hmm. How big was it? The model?
Well, the original model, I suppose, was, as I recall, was about half size, half height.
Mm-hmm.
Be about 18 inches,
mm-hmm.
because the finished piece was 36 inches tall.
3 feet high, huh?
And it was a seated figure.
I see.
So she was slightly larger than life size.
Female figure.
Mm-hmm.
And who has that piece now?
Well, that is in the Kimberly Art Center there in, or the Payne Art Center, they call it,
mm-hmm.
in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen it in place. Of course, mm-hmm. I saw it when I was finished. But Florence was hard, had been to Oshkosh and looked at it, and
mm-hmm.
she approved of it.
Is it a figure similar to the one at the House of Hospitality with a bowl in your lap?
Well, that was the original idea that Mrs. Payne had, but Donald said I wouldn't repeat myself because,
uh-huh.
after all, the medium dictates the way a figure is done,
mm-hmm.
and that one was done in limestone, which is a fairly soft stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first stone that we ever attacked, but things that are done in bronze, we had both studied bronze and cast a number of small things in Santa Barbara in the mm-hmm. late 20s.
There wasn't a foundry here, was there?
No.
Never had been it, has there?
Mm-hmm.
Never had.
Mm-hmm. They had a small one here down by the mm-hmm. railroad tracks, but
mm-hmm.
they only cast tiny things.
I see. Well, now, was that your first time in Italy?
Yeah, that was the first
uh-huh.
time.
Wasn't that kind of a high spot in your life? I mean, wasn't it something you kind of, even though it was cold, you looked back on with the excitement?
Well, I have a lot of memories. Some are pleasant and some are not so pleasant.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was really a time that we both enjoyed.
Good.
Donald said, after he'd been there sometime, he said, I'm very fortunate that I didn't come to Italy when I was young. He said, I would have been so overwhelmed with the work of the Renaissance masters that he said I would have been highly influenced.
Uh-huh.
And he was largely self-taught
uh-huh.
and wasn't influenced very much by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why his work is so individual.
It certainly is a completely individual. Now, when he did that war memorial, that was another time in Italy.
That was the
it?
Second trip.
And what year was that?
We went over there in, I guess it was April 1957,
mm-hmm.
until just about a year later we came home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the longest trip. The first trip was about 9 months, and
mm-hmm.
the second was nearly a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were over there, did you have the opportunity to visit any other sculptors like Noah's or... who was that other one that was in New York? I think he was a Yugoslav.
I
know he admired his work, and I remember there was an article in Life magazine, and there were four sculptors. Donald was one, and this other man began with a Z, and Millis, and one other. And he ranked Donald right along with these other three that were Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that article?
Vaguely,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
But he was also, he and Donald served on a big jury of sculpture back in New York at one time.
Metropolitan Museum.
Yes. Now, what is the name of that man? I'll think it up and I'll put it at the end. I mean,
right.
I know, I'm like you, I can't think of it at the moment, but I...
Names are very...
Yes.
Hard for me to remember now.
Yes, because his work is in Split,
mm-hmm.
Yugoslavia. There's a whole big exhibit,
mm-hmm.
and they belong to that same school. I mean, even though Donald was self-taught, somehow those four men, even though they didn't seem to know each other when they were in the beginning, there is a similarity in the
mm-hmm.
magnitude of their work, which is great. But now, that you went along with Donald in that one, too, didn't you?
Yes, I went over four times. Donald went over three.
I see.
We went over again in 1964.
And what was the piece that you were doing in 64?
Well, that was the last piece that Donald had modeled, and we were just finishing it up together, refining the plaster before he died. And he wasn't quite finished with it, but when he was in the hospital, he said, "Well, we might as well have it cast in plaster." He says, "I think it'll pass all right."
Uh-huh. This was 64? Has it been that?
Mm-hmm. We have that model here in the house.
Oh, you do? And then then you went over after his death and saw the casting of it.
Yeah.
Is that it? And is it in any of these pictures that was in that retrospective show of Donald? I'm going to turn this off for just. But Dana, that fourth time that you went over after Donald's death, what was the situation that made it necessary for you to go over there? What were you doing?
Well, when a bronze is made, it goes through several stages. The first is modeled in clay, then there's a cast made of that in plaster, mm-hmm. and the plaster is reworked and sharpened up a great deal. And then that model goes to the foundry.
Okay.
At least that's the way it works in foundry where we were in Italy.
Was that Florence?
That was in Pietrasanta, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 60 miles away down on the Tyrrhenian coast, west. It's
mm-hmm.
sort of a vacation place for people in Florence.
I see.
And so we sent the plaster over by air, and it was to go all the way from San Diego to Pisa,
mm-hmm.
and they lost it.
Oh dear.
And I was waiting for word to come from them, and we wrote back and forth, has the figure got there? No, but we're hunting for it. And eventually we found that it was in a warehouse in Pisa. They hadn't been able to get the box was too big for the planes that flew from Rome to Pisa, so they decided to put it on a train. And somehow or other, it got lost and found it eventually about 2 months later in storage in Pisa.
Oh.
And then they got it back and they said that we have it here. And I wrote back to them and said, make three waxes of them, and I will come over and retouch the waxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is quite a job. I worked every day for 5 weeks on those three models. They were it was cut in two and keyed in the center.
Uh-huh.
And
how tall was this piece now?
Well, it's about 6'8".
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they took those. They had those six pieces that I had to go over and refine, and if there are any places that were missing, I had to model them.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the rattlesnake head that's over his head, he is the summer rain, the violent rains of the desert regions in the summertime.
I see.
And he got that idea when we were in Mesa Verde one time.
Mm-hmm.
And the sky was perfectly clear, and we saw a little cloud about the size of a postage stamp and white puffs. And we watched it, and it just kept expanding very rapidly until the whole sky was black.
Oh.
And the thunder came and the rain poured down, and I said, I've got an idea for a sculpture here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is years later why he did this piece.
Uh-huh.
And he has a figure, he's dancing on the cloud form underneath, mm-hmm. and treading out the rain. And so I had to repair the end of the rattlesnake's nose, but it had been knocked off.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody there would know what to do with it.
I see.
And I had remembered.
Uh-huh.
So I worked there and got all of these pieces ready, and then it was time to go home.
Mm-hmm.
But I had an invitation from some friends in Rome. They wanted me to stay with them for a few days, so I went down there and
mm-hmm.
stayed with them and then went home.
I see. And that was in about 55, 54, 55?
No, that was later than that.
Yes, because they'd lost it for some time there.
Well, there was a couple of months.
Yes, uh-huh.
Put behind. So I got back there in the wintertime, and I'd expected to go back there in the fall.
I see.